This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Emmerich, CPA with Parm Ellison Associates. It was great to see a lot of you in Kansas City at the Vision Expo. Just want to say a special thanks to Sherry and the rest of the Mwaka crew for putting together another great event. Special thanks to Charlie at WorldPack for sponsoring us to go down there and talk to you guys for 2 days. And if you want to come out and see a class, listen, we'll be down at STX in about a month or so. And one of the classes, or it was actually a roundtable discussion about what if. What if this happens? What if that happens? Preparing yourself for the unexpected. Are you prepared for it? Are you not? What if something were to happen to you, your shop, your house, your employees, etc.? I think this is something super, super important. The feedback on the class was awesome. People that were young, old, I know I need to do this, or I never thought about doing this, and this is the kick and butt to get me to do something, which is exactly what we were trying to do there. What I want to talk about this week is actually some things that a couple shop owners shared with us that I thought were very eye-opening and caught a lot of people by surprise, but what better way to make sure it doesn't happen to you and your shop? Before we get into that, though, I just want to say thank you to all of the rest of the dedicated listeners that I was not able to see in Kansas City. Like I tell everyone, without you guys, this would be pretty boring and probably wouldn't do this because it would just truly me talking into a microphone into nothing. But the feedback, hey, Hunt, help keep up the good work. I love it. And thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for supporting and sharing it with friends as I hear so much. Also, as I read down through these notes that I wrote down before we left for Vision, I know that I owe you guys a mailbox episode, but wanted to put this one in here. And last but not least, I cannot forget our dedicated sponsor, Napatrax and Promotive, which I was lucky enough to see both Joel from Promotive and the Napatrax crew finally meet for the first time in person. Just to say thank you for supporting us, for being here. And if you guys do see Napatrax and Promotive and you are a fan of the show, obviously, if you're looking for a new shop management system or the right recruiter, give them a shout. Even if you just see them at the shows and like this show, go up to them and say, thank you for giving back to the industry. Thank you for allowing stuff like this to happen because they are really what keeps the lights on and what keeps this thing going. Hey, did you know Napatrax is on-site training plus 6 days a week support? It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Visit them online at napatrax.com. That's NAPATRACS.com. It's time to hire a superstar for your business. What a grind you have in front of you. Great news. You don't have to go at it alone. Introducing Promotive, a full-service staffing solution for your shop. Let them do the heavy lifting and enlist your hiring partner online at gopromotive.com. A lot of what I share on this podcast, teach in my classes, and honestly talk with my clients, I once learned from a shop owner just like you. From the things to be careful, because I've seen people go south or things go south for shop owners, to the things that I've seen successful shops apart from the rest. And there are so many different variables, even in the seemingly small industry. The roundtable at Vision was all about being prepared for the unexpected. Think about that, though. How do you prepare yourself for something that you don't expect to happen? It's a very often used phrase, but if you really think about it, it is a bit silly. If you're prepared, then how could it be unexpected? By default, you would have to think that it is somewhat expected in order to set changes, set procedures, or make sure that you are truly prepared. But enough of my critique of the English language here. The whole point of this talk was not to give the attendees the A to Z on this is what you have to do. It was not to write the will for you. It was not to set up an estate for you. But if anything, just to share a brutal wake-up call that you never know what is going to happen. The stories that I shared, the stories that Joe and Christine were willing to share, I think gave so many unique views and are all examples of how shop owners that were either prepared or weren't, and how to make sure that others don't fall into the same traps or make the same mistakes here. And luckily for us and everyone else in this room and everyone that's going to be listening to this episode, there were a number of brave people that were willing to share their stories or their successes to help other shop owners in the room and now on this podcast around the world. Here are the major things that I wrote down. And as I'm going down through this, some of these I actually wrote down. Other ones that I've heard about before, but it's, you know what? This is a really good reminder because I have seen this, but most people don't have the unique perspective that I do of dealing with hundreds of shops all over the countries. on a monthly basis. Let's get into this stuff of the big eye-opening. And some of these kind of have multifaceted angles to this. Maybe this applies to your shop. Maybe this does not. But these are things that we need to be mindful of. Everyone wants to think that this is never going to happen to them. And statistically, it's probably not. But most of these don't have a downside. I'm going to go out and I'm going to pay $80,000 for some insurance policy I'm never going to use. No, I mean, most of this stuff is free, or in this case of insurance, extremely, extremely cheap. If you figure it out beforehand, extremely expensive if you find out when it's too late. What does your insurance really cover? If you have a vehicle that will be stolen, totaled, something like that. These are all examples of stuff that came up in class of where people think of the bigger picture. Something were to happen, I know I'm covered. I know I have insurance or whatever it is, but to what end? And some of these exclusions, some of these special situations have really ended up costing a lot of people money. I have really two stories on this one with slightly different variations, but both of them came up a couple times, and it seemed like most shop owners thought this was a novel idea or something that they had never heard of before. The first story is, I guess, something that is becoming more and more common. Honestly, when I first started doing this in the early 2000s, we didn't really see as much theft as we did probably back in the 90s. Those of you doing the 90s or just alive in the 90s, stealing Hondas and stuff like that with a screwdriver was fairly common. Hot wiring cars, all kinds of stuff like that. But in early 2000s, with the introduction of chip keys and stuff like that, most auto theft was only done by trained professionals. It was getting harder and harder to do for someone with basic hand tools. Flash forward to today, where Hyundai and Kia owners know this all too well, that these cars are pretty darn easy to steal, and some of those was just a USB charging cord. But even if you look to the more sophisticated, not that I'm a fan of Dodge Chrysler products, but they are the most common ones to get sold with some of these technological advances. I'm not sure how this works. They scan the RF codes, and I've seen videos of this stuff getting stolen in minutes or even sometimes less than a minute, where they're unlocking a car, disabling the alarm, driving off with it before you ever know. But this story is from a shop owner that's actually in the Midwest. I'm not going to tell you location, even though I'm pretty sure he would not care if I was sharing this. I like to keep all of this stuff anonymous. Yeah, we're going to butcher that word, but you know what I'm talking about. Shop owner has a nice shop out there in a decent neighborhood, but you never know nowadays. And long story short, got three of the vehicles stolen out of his shop. One of them was very expensive. The other one was pretty expensive. And the other one wasn't that expensive of a vehicle. But that's actually not where this goes south. Well, I don't know if we have to give the whole story on this, but let's just put it this way. Bad guys got in. Bad guys got into the vehicles. Bad guys drove off with these vehicles. Shop owner was not uninsured. He has garage keeper's insurance on it. He had liability protection. I believe one or two of these things was recovered. One of them was never going to be recovered and never was. Anyways, the insurance company came through, paid for these vehicles, made it right with the customer. Now, these customers going to be back to the shop? I don't know. If you get a car stolen out of there, it's already hard enough to call a customer back and say, parts didn't come in, it's taking longer, let alone we don't have your car anymore. But one of the things that he was extremely surprised about is what the insurance was willing to cover. The customer was made whole, 100%. And for most people, that is all that they're really concerned about, because you don't really think about the what if situations that go above and beyond that. One of them, I think, was in there for a brake job. The other one was in there for minor service. I think just maybe a fluid exchange and something like that. But two of these tickets, all in all, were a couple $100s, maybe $1,000 between the two. Honestly, customer wasn't even worried about this. He wasn't going to charge the customer on this. I feel bad. Least I can do, get your car stolen, is give you a free oil change, especially when you're probably not going to get much value out of that. The other one had a massive ticket on it. That car was in there for a couple weeks on it. I think it even got a new motor in it. But my customer had a $30,000 repair order for that vehicle. Like I said, the customer was made whole when this vehicle got stolen. And that one was actually recovered. So this person actually got that new engine on it. How much use and abuse did these people put on it? Yeah, I don't know. We're not going to go down there. This guy was shocked to realize is that the theft of the vehicle wasn't covered by insurance. The customer got paid for that vehicle. However, my customer's repair order, the insurance company is not going to pay that. And as he found out more, almost no insurance companies pay for this. there is just much too big of a risk of fraud. This car was stolen. Maybe it was in there to get spark plugs that got stolen. Magically, that thing needed every new bolt, fitting, whatever, in the vehicle. There's too many ways that insurance companies feel like shop owners could lie about this stuff. As a blanket approach, most insurance companies do not cover theft of service like this. Hey, the vehicle was stolen, we'll pay for that. Whatever repair order you have, you're probably going to eat that. You could go back to the customer and you could try and collect from them, but are they likely going to pay for something on a vehicle that they no longer own? No. And honestly, I think a lot of shop owners would feel extremely bad even going and approaching a customer on that because this is really not your fault to a certain extent. But either way, now a shop owner is left with costs that they have no one to cover. Like I said, this might not be something that you could even stop or you can even avoid. We went around and asked around the room here, does anyone have an insurance policy that they know will cover this? And not a single soul came out. Like I said, I'm fairly confident that there is no way that you're going to be able to protect yourself on the insurance aspect. Insurance is not going to cover this stuff. But is it going to make you think twice about having these large tickets and what you do with those vehicles? Maybe you put the rest of them out in the lot. If I got a $30,000 ticket on that one, as I'm going to lock that in or maybe park that car in, that's not the one that gets stolen. Am I going to be a little bit less lenient on having a big ticket car sitting out there and waiting weeks for the customer to come pick this up? Yeah. And that seemed to be the consensus around the room. This has happened to me, or I've heard this happen to other people, and I don't let these cars sit here. If this thing is done, you better come get it, and you got 2 days to do it. Not to be mean, but I'm going to be yelling, screaming, come get this vehicle. Get it off my lot, because I'm sitting on a huge risk right now. Think about some of these bigger tickets for people that really invest into their vehicle. It could almost be the value of their vehicle, and if something were to happen to it, no one is going to get their money on this. Again, not going to give you an easy story, an easy solution here. Just go talk to your insurance agent and make sure you're covered. Just be aware of that. If something were to happen to that, the vehicle is covered, but your repair order is not. Do what you need to do to protect this. Another quick one that goes along the same lines of this. I had a customer where they finished the ticket on it. What they thought was a customer came to pick this thing up. It was a BMW. I think that they had an issue with the iDrive. The alleged customer said, can I go the iDrive to make sure it's working? Supervisor says, yeah, sure. Long story short, this guy drives off. They call the police and say, this is exactly what happened. And the police wanted nothing to do with it. Again, theft of a vehicle is different than theft of services. The police asked, hey, was that your vehicle? No, it was the customer. We think that was a customer, but we're not really sure. So they said there was no crime committed. If that's their vehicle, they took it. This is a civil issue because they did not steal an asset from you. That was theft of services, which is a civil suit, not a criminal complaint. All states are different. All cities are different. This one actually happened in Maryland here. If the laws are different in your state, then so be it. But be very, very careful with this stuff. Along the same lines here, we went in and someone else shared a story having to do with the same idea. What happens to the customer vehicle, but what happened to my repair order might be two different things. And this story came up from an accident that happened on a test drive. And again, if you have a test drive where you're test driving after doing an alignment, after doing an oil change, customer's vehicle gets totaled, everyone is safe and healthy. That is the most important thing. And you know what? You're not going to get paid on your $200 ticket. Whatever, so be it. Everyone's happy. Everyone's fine. Maybe not the end of the world. If you are in a situation like this customer, you might think a little bit different. Again, major, major ticket. I forget what happened on this one. I believe they did a major engine overhaul or maybe a transmission overhaul on it. But this car was there for a while. Massive ticket. Finally ready to get this thing out of shop. Customer took, or one of the technicians took it on a final test drive and got rear-ended. Just blasted this thing. Destroyed, totaled, all this hard work, thousands and thousands of dollars out the window. Again, just like the original customer on here was first concerned about their employee, making sure the technician was okay. Like I said, it was not the technician's fault. This was the other party's fault on it. The other party had insurance on it. Insurance covered the car, did not cover the repair order. Like we just talked about, I don't think that there is any way. What are you going to do? Not test drive any vehicles that have a big ticket on it? No, I mean, you have to. And honestly, those are probably the ones that are going to be getting the longer test drives because you want to make sure that vehicle is right before giving it back to the customer and losing confidence in it that you have a comeback on it, or God forbid you miss something and there was a safety issue. You need to catch that before a customer is driving it down the road or let alone puts their family in it. But how do you minimize the risk on a test drive? And I just asked that. Like I said, I don't have a shop. I work with shops all day, every day. There's some aspects of this where I'm extremely familiar, either from a customer point of view or just from my profession. But other stuff that kind of gets into intricate details, I love to hear. I posted this to the room and said, what do you guys do? And a lot of people look blankly and said, there is no set procedure. Go test drive it. You might be back in 2 minutes. You might be back in 8 minutes, whatever it is. Then we had a couple of people start sharing this. And I have heard about this in the past, but I thought, man, that is a really, really cool idea. One of the guys raised his hand and said, we have three different routes that we take. I know where my guys are. I don't want them on the phone. I don't want them using GPS. And some of them, the guys were even saying, we don't allow our technicians to even bring their phones in the car. I don't want the risk that they might get a text or they might get a notification on this. But how do you know where they are if none of them have phones? What if something goes wrong? This one shop owner raised his hand and said, we have three different routes, small, medium, large, depending on what the work is. And they have a set process and procedure. Hey, service whatever is going to get route A, service whatever is going to get route B, C, etc. If you have maybe a basic oil change, we're just going to go route A, just around the block. And if we have something larger, maybe a suspension work, we're going to do B. If we have an intermittent drivability, something like that, we're going to go route C, which is obviously the longest route. Is that just a set route so that they know where they are, or how did they decide that route? It was pretty cool. And I've heard other people doing this route, more or less so that people don't get lost and you make sure that you have all of the conditions met. Hey, stop, go, fast, slow, whatever it is. But a couple people went even farther. And where this all came from is if you look at like delivery men, the Amazon people, UPS, FedEx, watch how they drive. A UPS truck, you will never see at an intersection making a left turn when it has a left turn lane. You won't see them doing this. Why? Because what they did is they have statistics on this. They know the most likely routes, the most likely incidents that are going to cause a collision. You ever seen an Amazon truck back out of a driveway? No. Well, you shouldn't, because it's against their procedure. If they go into a driveway, they back into the driveway so that they can turn the regular direction out of a driveway. One of the most common ways to have an accident, back out of a driveway and someone hitting you because you're driving, I mean, especially those, a massive box truck with tons of blind spots. And yeah, what if someone's not paying attention and runs into the side of that? Again, left turns. I mean, if you live in New Jersey, you might even say, what is a left turn? Because there is no left turn lanes in Jersey. In order to go left, you got to go right. Those of you from Jersey will get a kick out of that. Those of you that are like, Hunt, what the hell are you talking about? Go to Jersey one time and you'll figure it out. But seriously, making sure that you have a test drive and avoiding some of these intersections around town where you know this causes issue is exactly what this shop owner did. This route has no left turns. He says that there's a couple intersections which just have strange traffic patterns, or you're merging onto a road where people are going very fast. And he was like, we've had issues in the past. We've had close calls on this. And he went around and talked to his entire shop and they came to up with a plan of what is the best route that we can take that's going to check all these boxes, make sure that all of these conditions are met so we can do our testing and diagnostic on this while also making sure that we can minimize risk as much as possible. Is this going to mean that it's not in an accident? No. Is this going to mean that they're not going to get lost? No, not necessarily, but they're trying to minimize their risk as much as they can. Why are they going to put themselves and have one technician go and say, oh my God, boss, I got in an accident, just for the boss to say, why the hell did you go on that road? That's a death trap, that people get in accidents all the time. And they're going to say, well, I don't know. I just made what I thought was a right move. I decided what I thought was the best route, but I probably wasn't thinking too deep into this. Versus the guys that have been trained, they have their route on it. You don't have to think about this. You don't have to think about traffic patterns. You just follow the route. Cool idea. Maybe it works in your shop. Maybe it doesn't, but just something to think about. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. They provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best wholesale support, hands down. They train your people on site. Yes, on site. They also offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give them a call, visit them, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. They'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for your business, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at napatrax.com. That's NapaTrax.com. Is your recruitment process draining your valuable time and resources? What if there was a partner who could take your recruitment efforts off your plate? Look no further. Promotiv is your ultimate solution for hassle-free staffing focused solely on the automotive industry. On the web at gopromotiv.com. Promotiv understands the challenges you face when searching for the perfect technician or service advisor for your shop. That's why we've developed a platform that takes the hassle out of recruiting. Michelle Tanzi from EuroClinic said, "I am a shop owner and recruiting new talent is so time-consuming. Promotiv does the majority of the seeking and recruiting. They reach out to the candidates for you, and when they feel they are a good match for you and culture, they make the connection. They follow up throughout the interview process, and we make sure that the candidates are a good fit and the shop is a good fit for the candidates. I admire that they genuinely want both parties to win. They recruited and paired us with a solid B-Tech and Master Tech. Both left a dealership position and are still part of our team. We are very happy with the character and culture match, and both technicians have become valuable team members." Visit our website at gopromotiv.com today and join the growing community of shop owners who have found their ideal team members with Promotiv. Next one on here, and really as I look down through this, really two major aspects here that have a couple different stories. Like I said, the first one was insurance, and a couple different things surprised me about that. Theft service, routes, planning. The next one all has to do with fire. Fire is probably the most likely risk that you have of your shop. Think about it. You're working with bombs on four wheels. We got, 10, 20 gallons of gasoline in there, pressurized. Everything is hot. One small fuel leak onto a hot exhaust, it's going to become an inferno before you know it. And also, these bombs on four wheels are parked inside of hundreds or million dollar facility with hundreds of thousands of dollars of tools, equipment, you name it. I don't think I got to explain to you what the risk is. I'm going to share with you a couple different stories on here. And as I went around the room, I could start seeing head shake. And I mean, we had 60, 70 people in that class. And I would say at least five of them had had a small to moderate fire in their shop. This stuff does happen. First story about it is a client down in Kentucky, and they had a fire. And the fire marshal came out, and my client was telling me this story later. And he was like, he knows the fire marshal had been in town for a while. And he was like, this guy was just grilling me. Just the way he was asking questions, he was like, hang on a second. Why are you using this accusatory manner? And finally, after this was settled and they realized that my client did not actually start the fire, the fire marshal came up to him and said, I got to be honest with you. You probably sense from my tone, I was fairly confident that you guys did this. I was fairly confident that if you did not do this, someone else did. And I would have almost bet my life that this was arson. Luckily for my shop and a lot of shops out there, they had cameras. And having cameras everywhere, I cannot stress the importance of this. Cameras inside, cameras outside, recording everything. This is the only thing that probably saved my client. The whole reason why this fire marshal thought that this was arson is because I don't know how they do this. It's actually truly incredible. But they can tell where in the shop that this fire started. And so they could tell based on whatever clues that this fire actually started in three distinct areas inside of the shop. That is what set them off of. Someone must have set this thing on fire. There's the only way that this could have happened. It's not a massive shop, but I think it's three or four bays. And there was a fire that started on one. There's one in the middle and actually one on the far side of it. How else is that supposed to happen except someone with a blowtorch? Luckily enough, they had the video system and they went back and they reviewed the footage. And what they noticed was, yeah, the fire did start in three distinct areas, but absolutely no one was in this building. How did that happen? And a crazy situation, no one would have guessed, but when they went back and they looked at the videos, what they noticed was all of this started on one of the workbenches. If you watch the video, there is a small smoke fire, or there's a small fire that just started with a little bit of smoke coming from one of the battery chargers. It was a battery charger that was charging a battery from an impact, and something happened. It started to short out. That started to smoke. Eventually, that caught on fire, and then the battery pack actually exploded. What happened when that battery pack exploded is obviously it started a fire on the workbench, and when it exploded, one of those batteries, smoldering hot batteries, exploded and went over into a trash can. I'm with you. This is a wild story. This is why the fire marshal probably thought this had to be arson, because the probability of this happening just by chance is very far-fetched. But it was on video. We can prove all of this stuff. Battery exploded, landed in a trash can in the center of the shop. What else was in that trash can? Some old brake clean cans, dirty rags, trash, you name it. Of course, that trash can caught on fire too and blew up one of the brake clean cans. Brake clean can blew up, went over to the other side of the shop and started a fire. And I forget what was over there. I think it was actually boxes that they were getting ready to recycle or take out to the dumpster. And there you have it. Three distinct fires throughout the shop. Why did that come up? Why did I mention that story? How do you protect yourself? Well, a couple different things. Cameras. They are so freaking cheap now. Honestly, for most people, how good the image quality is now. You could even have one or two cameras inside the shop that will cover it. But for a couple extra $100 on it, you could get something that probably covers every square inch. You might have never thought that you need it, but fires, workers' comp claims, customer damage claims, these things have become invaluable for shop owners. You spend $1,000, $2,000 on a video system, this could save you hundreds of thousands of down the road, getting away from the he said, she said, believability type stuff. Why do you think so many people have dash cams? Because if you don't have a dash cam, all it comes down to is I stopped, he said, he stopped. It's my word against theirs. Yet if one of them has dash cam footage on it, videos don't lie. Another story on this, the same idea. And this one actually, this was a couple of years ago, but this one came like a month after. And I had a shop where the shop unfortunately burned all the way to the ground, literally torched the entire thing. What started that? Again, impact batteries. You've probably heard of this stuff. And if any of you guys are from Maryland, one of the airports here wouldn't even allow Chevy Bolts to park in a parking garage because of the risk of fire. Am I a naysayer of EV electric? No, of course they catch on fire. We're talking about comparing the combustibility of batteries to the combustibility of an internal combustion engine, a vehicle that has a massive fuel tank. We know that there's risk of fire, electrical fire, chemical fire, whatever it is. But impact batteries are no different. I'm not going to get into the metallurgy of a battery, but essentially when these cells are intact, brand new, they are very stable, they are very safe. But think about your impact batteries. Think about how your technicians use them. They get thrown on the bench, they get dropped on the ground. Sure, sometimes they get used as a hammer to whack some stubborn things on this, and eventually those cells degrade, you get something that arcs out, and boom, you have a fire. Does this mean that I am against batteries? And no, this one hit home for me. I mean, if you look at my workbench, it's no different from a lot of people. I have a bunch of red Milwaukee batteries sitting out there charging. Has this made me change my ways? Yeah, I mean, I used to always have these things sitting there charging, and pretty much any time I was done with them, I would take them off of the tool and I would put them on the charger. I'm not going to lie, I still do have them charging out there, and my garage is in my house, and we actually have to have a sprinkler system on all new construction in Maryland. Yeah, could there be a fire? Sure. Hopefully the sprinkler get it. But yeah, I've thought about this and I probably should do something different. Why do I share this? Is this to say, you know what, if something were to happen, I can go back and show my insurance company this episode? No, I'm telling you that I get it. Some of this stuff is, but Hunt, this is annoying. But if something were to happen and one of these to catch on fire, I'm going to feel pretty stupid and I really will delete this episode. No one hears that I didn't take my own advice. When I openly shared this and I went around and I asked a lot of shop owners in the room, I got varying levels of agreeance on this. There was a couple in there that said that they don't allow any impact batteries. They're all air, which I thought was a little bit strange, but I guess there's people that do that. But realistically, a couple others said, we've heard about this too. We were advised by our insurance on this stuff. And one of them even said, I think they had a small issue with this before. And the insurance says, if you don't change this, we can't cover this because it would almost be negligence if this was to happen again. I said, all right, guys, we know this is not going away. Battery impacts are probably the future of this. What are you guys doing? Some of them lock everything in a fireproof cabinet. One of those wall cabinets you'd use to put flammable chemicals in. A couple of them actually converted those ones to chargers. One of them had a pretty big one. He showed me after class. It was pretty cool. And so it was actually a wall cabinet that had four different shelves, and all four of his technicians had their own shelf. None of the charging happened on their actual workbenches. The only place a charger was allowed to be is in this. And during the day, they could have it open so they could take it in and out. At night, it was someone's responsibility to lock that and make sure that it was shut. If there was a fire, if one of those things exploded, yeah, it would have burned probably the other ones in there, but it would have not burned the shop and everyone would be okay. A lot of people also shared that their process and procedure is that nothing is plugged in overnight. Some of you guys have probably heard this about lifts. With the new safety switches that a lot of them have, it is not as uncommon, but I think I just saw this the other day. The lift that I saw this happen on in one of these groups was like, who was working under that lift. I wouldn't even put my least favorite employee under that lift on it, but it was one where they had some sort of electrical short, or I think maybe even lightning, and it shorted out the lift, and the lift went up and actually crunched a car on there. But I've heard a ton of people, they unplug their lift, they flip the breakers on the lifts, and a lot of people also shared that they do the same thing for chargers. Hey, there's no reason for these things to charge overnight. Every night, the breaker for the chargers gets taken off, or you have to unplug the chargers or something like this. Something to think about. Maybe you've had it happen before. Maybe you have been close enough to seeing this. A lot of you that have used these tools before, it's when they go bad, sometimes they just immediately stop. Sometimes they start smoking pretty good. I know I had an old Sawzall, which I was annoyed. It finally let me down. I had that thing for 20 years and I was using it one time. I think I was cutting some lag bolts off of something. Started to smoke, started to get pretty hot, and then actually split in two. Literally the entire thing caught on fire and broke in half. But 20 years for, I think, $2 Sawzall that I got at a yard sale, that thing didn't owe me any money. But again, I was outside. I chucked it on the ground and sprayed it off with the hose once it was finally done and obviously unplugged on there and threw it in the trash. If I would have been using that and not noticed that it was smoking and chucked that in my shed, yeah, I mean, that would have been the end of my shed. Even though there's no combustible gas, electrical fires do happen. And even worse, you take all the precautions with a gas can. The risks of that, a lot of people don't even perceive that they have any risk for some of these electric or battery powered things. Going down through that stuff, one of the things that came up on both of those ones actually was that what was covered and what was not covered. Like we said before, if you have a fire in your shop, customers' vehicles are going to get taken care of. The repair orders are not. That one, again, burned both of these guys, but really in the grand scheme of it, it was not as big of a deal as some of these other things. What does it not cover? Neither of these guys actually had coverage on their employees' tools. When the building fire happened on it, everything that they had for the most part was covered. But what they found out is their technicians' tools weren't actually covered. The first story on there where there was actually the three different fires, they mostly just had smoke damage. There wasn't really any major fire in there. And so those guys' tools didn't really matter. There was some stuff that was gross covered with soot, obviously, in ash, but all those guys were fine. And he only found out because when the adjuster was going through, he just made an offhand comment. Lucky those tools are good because those are not covered. The other one, those employees' tools were truly destroyed. Two of the employees had some sort of insurance on those. I think they might have had it through the tool truck, but asked in the room, said, how do you get insurance for your employees' tools on this? A couple people did share, sometimes these tool truck guys will actually sell insurance plans, but even if you don't have any balance at a tool truck, or maybe you're not a tool truck person, if you have personal homeowners insurance, if you have personal car insurance, this is a rider that you can add on top. I have these tools. This is where it's located. Here's how much all this stuff is worth. That brings up a very good point. And a lot of people don't think about this, but I'm going to give you a little bit of a wake-up call. Imagine that you do have a toolbox and maybe you got rid of your toolbox years ago because you're like, I need to get off the tools. That's why I started the shop. But think about when you used to have a toolbox and being able to inventory everything that you have. Let's say that there was no character clues. This thing truly was torched and you just have a pile of molten plastic, metal, all kinds of garbage. How much of that would you be able to memorize? How much of those 3/8 inch sockets do you remember that you really have? If you got it off the tool truck, you have some sort of documentation on it, you might be able to go back and recreate it. But be honest, best case scenario, you get maybe what, 80%? What if you had videos of this stuff? What if you had an Excel spreadsheet of all the things that you bought, how much you paid for, maybe even what it's worth now? Wouldn't that be much more helpful? For sure. And this is going back to the video. I went around and I asked a lot of people around class what they do. There was a number of people that said, I have an Excel inventory of every single piece of shop equipment that they have, and I've shared it with my team members, and they keep track of their own things as well. Is that hard? Yeah, I mean, especially if you have a big shop with a bunch of different stuff. What some of the other people in the room shared were a little bit more simple ideas that probably will only take about a minute. And what he recommended that his technicians do at least a couple times throughout the year, and he did it himself, is he just turned on his iPhone, started recording. Just walked around the shop, up, down, left, floor, ceiling, into drawers, inside closets, all around. And he just said, this is my inventory. If I ever have to go back and reference something, I will be able to use these videos, get pictures out of this to hopefully be able to recreate as much as what I possibly have. Same thing with a technician. If you got 8 drawers on your tool chest, all you do is you turn on your iPhone, record the top drawer, left, or drawer 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You have all of it. Making sure you're moving the stuff, getting stuff that's underneath it. But again, that video is going to give you your proof to justify what you had in your toolbox to either give to the insurance company or also recreate that same spreadsheet later on with the video as proof and reminders of what you had and didn't have and stuff like that. So again, what if just asking yourself, and this is not just for you, this is making sure that you take care of your team, because what they said was a lot of times people keep on asking, well, what do we legally have to do? Is legally wise, yada, yada, yada. And what they said is there's two different things here. And I'm not concerned about illegal. I'm more concerned about immoral. I don't necessarily have to do this, or I'm not legally obligated to do, but this is the right thing to do. Think about this from a technician's tool standpoint. Legally, if you have a fire in your shop, even if it's probably your fault, you do not have to replace your technician's tools. But are you going to? Yeah. Probably it's the right thing. And especially if it's your fault, you're going to do this. So even though you have no legal responsibility on this, most people listening to this probably would feel terrible if they didn't and do not want to put their employees in a bad situation. It's probably going to come out of your pocket. You might want to do something to make sure that you're covered as much as you possibly can be. You might be thinking to yourself, okay, Hunt, you're trying to scare me here. And I feel like that I'm completely unprepared on all of this. I don't even know where to start. And I agree. This is something, like I said before, no one likes to talk about, no one wants to think about, but probably should. And what I always tell people is start with the question, what if? That was the name of the roundtable. That was the name of the class. And I think that it is a very good place to start. And it can lead to many different directions. What if I had a fire in my shop? What if I had a customer that drove through the back of building of my shop? What if I had a technician that got an accident? What if I had a customer get an accident in a loaner car? What is going to be covered? What is not going to be covered? What is the documentation going to need to be? What I want to do to you is go down through and start making these questions to yourself. What if any of these stories were to happen to me? Would I lead the same fate? Would I be better? Would I be worse off? Anytime you see these stories shared, these horror stories that are shared in these Facebook groups, maybe in your coaching groups and stuff like that, ask the question to yourself, all right, this just happened to one of my colleagues here. What if this happened to me? No one ever thinks this is going to happen. And these examples here, and these are all real stories. Some of you guys might be saying, well, hon, I need to hear more about these ones. But these are all what ifs that really did happen to clients. And all of these happened probably in the last 2 or 3 years. What if I was to be hit by a motorcycle while on vacation out of the country and was in a coma? It happens. Is there someone there can take over? Is there someone there that knows where to pick up? Is there someone there can sign checks and everything else in between? What if a pressurized line from an oil drum, an oil filling system, breaks and leaks hundreds of liters of oil all over the shop, inside of customers' vehicles, and leaves about a couple inches all throughout the shop? Yeah, it happened to one of my clients, and they were not covered by it. What if you were to die unexpectedly, have no family members, no kids, not married, nothing like that? Happened to my client, had the employees call me up and say, we need to run payroll. So-and-so just passed away. We couldn't do anything. Bank shut down the accounts immediately because there was no next of kin. It gets really, really tricky really fast. And lastly on this, what if someone was to come into the shop and steal all the keys from your customers' vehicles? Are you covered? Had this happen to my shop, found out later they were not covered for those keys. Why? I am not really sure. Essentially, what they were told by their insurance company on this is it's very similar to the contents of a customer's vehicle. They deemed the keys as the customer's property and not actually the vehicle themselves. So I think they got like 20 different keys stolen on it, and it cost them a ton of money. Because I'll tell you what, they never recovered the keys. And so a lot of the customers, I would say rightfully, did not want those same lock cylinders put back into their vehicles. They wanted to get all of these rekeyed, retooled, and stuff like that. It was a massive, massive deal. He's protected on this stuff now, but he was not in the past. Maybe your insurance covers all this. Maybe you're going to figure out when you talk to your agent that you're all good and you have nothing to worry about. That peace of mind is also worth a lot more than just being deliberately ignorant that this could never happen to you and it wouldn't be as bad if it did. And I know all this seems overwhelming and morbid, because you're exactly right. Everyone likes to live their life like it's not going to happen, which statistically is probably true. However, when something like this does happen, it's probably not going to feel any better to think to yourself, well, I didn't think it was going to happen to me. And believe me, your family will know that you didn't think it was going to happen to you when they're left to pick up the pieces. Good news is you don't have to do this alone. Talk to your insurance agent. Good ones will run through these what ifs. Talk to your lawyer. They have done wills, trusts, and estates hundreds of times, even if you never have. This is not new information to them, even though it might be new information to you. You don't need to be an expert on everything, but you definitely need to find someone that is. I hope this was helpful. Please share with friends, fellow shop owners, fellow small business owners, And if you have any comments, ideas, or want to be on a future episode, please shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listing apps. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.